China Corner is proudly brought to you by the Embassy of the People's Republic of China in Namibia.
Welcome and good evening to this evening's session of the China Corner for the month of September. And as you do know, every first Wednesday of a new month, we bring you the China Corner brought to you by the Embassy of China to Namibia. In this evening's discussion, we speak to two journalists who formed part of a recent delegation that traveled during the month of May earlier this year to China, and more specifically, were toured the city or the metropolitan area of Shanghai. Philip Joseph and Martin Njala form part of this evening's engagement, where I, Dwight, have had the privilege of interviewing as well as also talking with them about their impressions as well as also their particular insights and what they learned from this particular visit to Shanghai. Much of this also centers on the particular historic as well as also the commercial and overall economic planning that they were exposed to during their visit to Shanghai, as well as also you will have the opportunity in seeing into these particular engagements that I had the opportunity to interview them in terms of how they see as well as also their particular takeaway from their visit to Greater Shanghai. On that note, let's have a listen to their particular engagements.
Martin, thank you for taking the time to talk to us here on China Corner and basically to share with us your particular impressions and some of the key talking points in terms of your visit that you had the opportunity with as being part of a media delegation earlier this year. But before I actually start, Martin, let me give you the opportunity to say hello to our listeners for this evening.
Thank you so much, Dwight, for having me. A very good evening to the listeners.
100%. So, Martin, if we start off in our discussion for this evening, obviously, just give us sort of like a brief background of who you are and the organization that you represent, and specifically how you formed part of this delegation for earlier this year.
Right. Yes, for our listeners out there, so as you stated clearly, I am part of the media practitioner, Martin Njala. I represent the Namibian newspaper. So basically, how I came to be part of this, lifetime experience is through an invitation which the Chinese embassy extended to the company, and I was chosen to go and represent the company as part of a delegate that from Namibia, a program that is organized by the embassy of China, where the exchange cultures, the exchange knowledge, the exchange a whole diversity of information about what China is all about. So in short, that's exactly how I became part of that delegation, simply because of that relationship between Namibia and China, where every year they select a group of delegates from Namibia and they go to China to go and experience China with their own eyes and not just by hearing from people.
Mm. 100%. So, Martin, if we obviously cascade into sort of like our first talking point that emanates from this, firstly, I'd like you to share, you know, where the delegation, you and the delegation concentrated, where was your visit mostly concentrated on, primarily because this obviously, our discussion obviously plays a big part in or highlights a big role in terms of the specific geographic location. For me personally, I went to an entire province, but I think for your delegation, you guys were just concentrated in a economic hub for this scenario.
Yes, you are right indeed. So our delegation, we went to Shanghai. So we basically just around Shanghai. We did not go outside Shanghai, but we have visited various towns or within Shanghai itself. And just to start off, for every visitor going to China, for you to understand the history of that country, you first need to be exposed to their historical journey. And we were fortunate to be taken to the center where the history is actually being, you know, being told to all the visitors to understand how they started, how the Communist Party came about. And so within Shanghai, we were treated to a visit to the, that is the National Congress of the Communist Party of China, which is located just around the Huangpu South Road. We understand that there's an old one and there's a new one, but they're all close to each other. So it's not really far from each other. So this is where the first meeting took place, of and how the Communist Party came about and the whole revolution, how it all started to fight against, you know, economical oppressions, to fight for freedom and China to become who they are today. It all started in that particular area. And apart from that, the history, we were exposed to so much information that you could actually understand why China is developing at a fast pace, simply because everything is channeled to one particular goal. So every person in China seems to be aligned with that goal. If, say, for instance, for this year, if they say they are going to construct 5,000 houses, every sector in that country or that particular area will have to align themselves to that goal. So by the end of the year, those 5,000 would have then been realized. So it's almost like one, the central government and it with one goal, and everyone on a daily basis, they do their level best to feed that goal, to make sure that by the end of whatever timeline they have set up, that particular goal is achieved. But Dwight, we did not just end there. We actually visited as well as the Shanghai Urban Planning Exhibition Center. So this is it's like a museum, but it has offices as well. So within this museum, we were exposed to what they are planning to do for Shanghai. For instance, in the 5 years to come, Shanghai is going to be to have a total different look to how it looks right now, because when we left, they've shown us around the old buildings, the aging buildings. You know, unlike here in the country, our buildings are aging and we don't see any renovation happening. It's a different story in Shanghai. So in this center, they showed us a 3D dimension where they showed us what they are planning to do in certain areas within Shanghai. And one of those things that they are trying to do is to, the old structure is getting renovated and to be brought to the level of the modern buildings. So we are talking about skyscrapers, you know. If you go in Shanghai, that's mostly you'll see tall buildings in that particular city. And they have designated a new area. That area is basically concentrating on the new technology. So they are trying to build even taller skyscrapers. You know, in Shanghai we have the what you call the tallest building in Shanghai, which is
the tourist attraction. Yeah, what's his name?
Yes, so they are now trying to even build higher towers than that. So it shows you how synchronized their plan is, and this is not just in Shanghai alone. This is also in other provinces. You're talking about Beijing as well. They're doing a similar thing. So whatever plan the government comes up with, it goes down till to the last person in any sector, and whatever they do on a daily basis, they make sure that they arrive to that goal. So China celebrated their 15th anniversary of their 5-year plan, and their 5-year plan, as was explained to us, is that they're trying to look into infrastructures. They're trying to build more, renovate more. And the problem they have right now is not really the industry. The industry is there, but there is an element of concern where the population age, you know, it's aging. And they need now new young bloods to come in. So this is why if you go in China, almost every corner, you will bump into a student. They are studying, and not just any kind of study. It's well calculated, field of studies. So upon completion, you are guaranteed because the industry has already been set up for you. And I think, it's a very, very unique plan that China is really working on. So if we are to visit Shanghai in the next 5 years, I'm sure I'm going to be looking at a different Shanghai that I saw last month.
Yeah. Well, Martin, it's a good thing that you gave a description of the particular sites within the city, or let me rather say the metropolitan area of Shanghai, because It leads us into the first dimension in terms of what impressed you specifically of the visit, and which one of those particular sort of like impactful events during the visit stood out for you, and why did they stand out for you?
If I have to pick out, because we were so exposed to, I mean, we were there for a week, but the program was so tight and we had to cover so many things within that short period of time. But if I have to pick out one that really stood out for me is when we visited the CPC center, where they explain to us the process, you know, to how the decisions are made, how they arrive to developing that 5-year plan. So it's similar to ours. So before they even draw it up, they do consultations with the local people. They scout, in other words, you know, they send out scouts to see what are the pressing issues within that particular area. And within that particular area, there are representatives that then go and sit in those consultations. And that's how they gather all this information. And when it reaches now to the high table of the CPC, that's now where they look at which areas are mostly, you know, the urgent, the pressing issues, the bread and butter issues. That's what they look at. And this is how they came up with their 5-year plan to say in the five next years to come, we need to do away with ABCD. We need to do this away with this. So I was very intrigued to see that it's not just the government deciding what to do, but they are doing what the people actually want, and when you ask local people, they are aware that there's such a plan in place. And they'll tell you that, no, I am contributing to the economy by doing A, B, C, D, because this is what we want to achieve in the next years or in the next 5 years to come, for example, based on their plan. But what also intrigued me was how complaints or issues are actually addressed by the CPC. So they have an open door policy. So if you have an issue with a certain matter, they have mechanism where instead of waiting for 5 years, if there is an urgent issue, they have already allocated a committee that looks at these issues where you can lodge your complaint, and they can take that up with the high table and try to sort it out as soon as possible. And these issues are mostly related to, let's say, for instance, there's a pipe that burst, you know, in a very busy street. So you can't wait for years for them to come and arrive to that project. So there's already designated committee that looks at these issues and they act upon on the basis on the urgency of the issue. The other part that really caught my eye is we visited a place that is called New Era Urban Building. So basically, this is like this company. Its job is to create or manufacture affordable materials for the local people, and they've demonstrated to us how they use these materials. But to my surprise, they've actually constructed homes for single people and homes for those who are like married.
For families and for like bachelors and bachelorettes.
Yes.
Yeah.
These were not just for anyone. These were like for their own workers. So if you are working for that company and you don't have a home or you don't have accommodation, so they've set up these structures for their workers. And I'm telling you, Dwight, you are like in a bachelor flat. And the price that they are charging is about $1,000 to a 2.5 for a single residence. And for the family, it's not even more. It's about 3,000 to 5,000 Namibian dollars
per month,
to give an example.
Yeah.
And the way it's structured, the materials are of quality and it's spaces. And for me, that just brought me back to say, we have this same issue in the country where people are literally looking for accommodation. But here you have a company that goes out of its way to construct this residential for its own workers.
Yeah.
And for me, that was really something that really caught my eyes, because on top of that, they have a kitchen where all the workers go and sit and unwind, you know, after a very, stressful day or a hectic day. And the meals are for free. You don't pay for them. They have a designated chef. But then, you know, inasmuch as we might be praising this inventive modernization that is coming, we need to understand that China is different from Namibia in terms of population. So what works for China does not necessarily mean it might work for us. But I believe that our government can learn one or two things.
Yeah.
You know, we can take that model and make it suit our style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to tailor something to our needs.
Correct.
Yeah. And if there's still something, Martin, you wanted to add, you can still add before I interrupt.
Oh, okay. Perhaps the one thing that I would add is that our museums here in the country are well known for historical purposes and all these.
Mm.
But I will not lie to you, Dwight. I cannot remember a day I woke up and I said, I'm excited, I want to go visit our museum. I'll be lying if I said that.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing exciting.
Yeah.
There's nothing that can give you chills.
Mm.
I mean, if you visit the CPC, First Nation of CPC Center, you'll be amazed. Like the amount of innovation that went in there. And perhaps this is where our content creators might be failing us, or maybe where our government might be failing our content creators.
Mm.
Because this is the areas where they can thrive.
So it's more like the storytelling. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's not just about drawings or printings or paintings. It goes way more than that. I mean, we went into one of the museum and they have sort of like 3D, you know, where they display the entire Shanghai for you right there. And, you know, they've made it so exciting, you know, and I'm telling you, when you look around, it's a group of tourist people coming in and going out. Imagine the amount of revenue those museums are making.
Mm.
And now our museums are beautiful, but they are empty.
Mm.
And I think we need to really look at that, especially our Heritage Council need to look at that and perhaps, you know, take one or two ideas from what China is doing great to turn their museum, you know, into something very fascinating. Because you enter those museums, Dwight, and you would not want to come out anytime.
Yeah.
You would want to explore as much as you can. And the other museum we visited was a place called Meteorological Museum. And, you know, the term meteorological, we all, you're talking about weather instruments and all these things. So that's what they're displaying in that museum. But the kind of instrument they're displaying is how people back in those days, they used to measure air speed, how they used to tell it's day or it's night, you know, how to measure temperature. So they have all these old instruments, and it was really eye-opening. And to a point where, Dwight, they have a system. If you go up, they have a weather center where they've created a system called Mazu. So it's like an AI weather-focused system put in place where different countries across the world have partnered and are part of that AI weather system, where if a typhoon, say, for instance, is occurring in your neighboring country, the AI system is able to flash or to flag it on time to say, at this specific time, this hour, this and this is going to happen. So giving people time to also evacuate to safety.
Yeah.
And for me, to see a weather station within a museum, it was really something that we don't see on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, early, what do they call those things? Early warning systems.
Yes.
Which is also something Namibia tries to improve on and to perfect. Martin, it's a good thing that you highlight also some of the particular dimensions of the visit that you had there in Shanghai. The next particular talking point, I know you emphasized a lot on the cultural cultural and creative aspects, which you also expanded on right now. But just to sort of like round out that question for some of the things that you've already mentioned, what other major talking points also stood out for you specifically? And were there any other interesting aspects, for example, besides the museums that highlight all the particular innovative dimensions of Chinese society or even Shanghai society for that matter?
Apart from the visits, we did have one-on-one engagements with various professors from the most of them were from the university, so it's the Shanghai International University. And the one thing that was really coming out a lot was political will and good governance. Those two key words kept coming out to say there is a will to ensure that China continues developing. And you know, and one professor actually even joked to say they don't even feel they are developed yet. You know, they call themselves as a developing country. And I ask a question to say, I mean, if I compare Namibia and China, I would say we are still developing. And you have already accomplished what we are trying to accomplish. And he smiled to me and he said, the reason why they are keeping that tone is because they want to keep improving every day, every time. And this is why they are involved in so many fields of studies. They send out students to go do research on so many issues, infrastructures. If there's a new trending technology, they send out their students to go do research on that. Not to copy and paste, but to go and learn and come back and see how they can implant that into their day-to-day lifestyle. Now, we all know that the economy of China is really one of those booming economy in the world. There's no hiding from that. But he did point out to say that in as much as China is trying to develop itself, one of its greatest weapon or one of its great ambitions is to elevate other countries. And this is why you see they have sent out so many doctors from China. I mean, if you go to the Katuchura State Hospital, they have a ward that is dedicated to what do you call it?
Acupuncture and Chinese medicine.
Yes, exactly. And this is why you even see in Namibia you have so many Chinese companies operating in different sectors, infrastructures, because this is their ambition, not just to grow their own economy, but also to grow the economy of other countries that they are partnering with. And one of the reasons for doing that is because they know for a fact that there are certain elements or there are certain things that China might not have, but in helping other countries, they can actually leverage from that. For instance, in Namibia, you have uranium. And China wants to be a self-sustainable energy country. And so they are using all these to sustain themselves. And in doing so, they are also sustaining other countries. The only downfall for that is I think they are moving so fast, and our markets, you know, there are certain markets like in Namibia We lack those expertise. Mm. We lack the financial muscles. And I'm referring not to trading, in terms of trading. China has quite what you call it robotics.
Mm.
Robotics, but unfortunately, most of their market is Europe and in America.
Mm.
And that's not to say that they are disregarding Africa, but that's just, you know, that's where the market is.
Mm.
Imagine Dwight going to China and ordering a robot that can come clean your entire house. You have your 60-year-old auntie there. She has never seen a robot in her life.
Mm.
I mean, do you imagine the chaos and the running around is going to be in that house. You know?
It's besides the auntie, even the dog and the cat might run away. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So these are some of the downside that I picked up from our engagement that, Africa is still doing catch up, but we are really far away because by the time we are going to arrive to that level of robotics, Europe and China and America, they will be talking about another new different development.
Mm.
And this is why China has all this partnership with various African countries. So to make sure that Africa does not remain behind, they have what you call the exchange of cultures, where Namibia sends young, brilliant, minds to China to come and study all these new developments, and vice versa, they send Chinese students to go and do research, and also to go and, you know, give their expertise to Namibians, so that by the time we purchase these robots or whatever we are trading, it's not going to be something new. It's everybody's going to be aware of what is it all about, and you'll have the expertise to operate such machines.
Yeah.
Moving away from trade, their education setup is also one to admire. Mm. Where like the university where the professors are from, it's an international university and they speak all the languages there. I mean, Russian, German, all the languages are there. And mind you, Dwight, every time we went for the conferences, you would bump into a different person from different countries. Even Africans, they are as well at that university. And that just tells you how China is trying to diversify their education system, not trying to keep everything to themselves, but trying to share in as much as they can with the rest of the world.
So we can basically, Martin, look at it almost like a building a community specifically through knowledge sharing, as well as also through information sharing, basically.
Exactly.
Yep. Martin, I know I promised I'd take about a good 20 minutes from you, but you've actually over-delivered for me. So the last question we'll leave it out, but I'd like you to just sort of like in a nutshell, in a summary, highlight, you know, the key things that Namibia can learn from through your eyes, from what you've observed and from what you've just now described to us and the listeners. Yeah, what we basically can learn through what you've seen.
Well, Dwight, I think Namibia is already learning quite a lot from China, and we were fortunate enough to visit the Machau town it's a place called the Minhang District. It's like a sister to sister partnership between the Machai town and the Okahanja town. And I believe that having Namibia represented in that fashion already shows that we are interested in learning what China is doing and how we can take that and bring back home and try to turn it into something that works for us. And why I'm saying that is because, I mean, this partnership has been there for over 36 years now, but it was never renewed. And I've been informed that next month the Okahandja and the Machai town are going to renew this partnership. And I would like to believe that it's going to include all the things that we just highlighted in terms of housing, employment, infrastructures, and trading. Yes. So, and this is really what I hope, you know, the agreement, whatever they are going, the MOU or whatever agreement that they're going to sign in September, that that housing and unemployment be part of the core center of those discussions. Because my takeaway from China is you won't see a beggar on the street. Everyone seems to know what they are doing. You know, everyone is running a business, be it physical, be it online. And everything in China is done by a press of a button. You know, you order your food is by a press of a button. They don't use cards like here. They use online mechanism to, you know, and I think housing and particularly infrastructure, because this has been an issue for us here in the country, unemployment and housing. And we are actually already moving into that era here in Windhoek where land is becoming scarce. We can no longer afford to give one person a piece of land that way he or she can build their mansion. We can no longer afford to do that. And that's what China is really looking at their models of infrastructures, because the population is growing. You can't afford to give 1% land that can fit about 10 people. And I think Namibia can learn from that, especially. And I understand that. I think there was a delegation here. I'm speaking under correction. I'm not so sure. I hope it's from Shanghai, but there was a delegation that met with the city of Windhoek, and I have been told that a draft has been submitted to the city of Windhoek, and it's now with the Ministry of Urban and it's talking about infrastructure, it's talking about roads, it's talking about housing, because in Namibia right now, that's really the things that we need right now, because we have young people who are working.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
Things that we need right now, because we have young people who are working. They have nowhere to go. They don't have accommodations. And if we can emulate what China is using in terms of materials and the model they are applying, I think Namibia, in particular the city here in Windhoek, can actually become a home to many thousands and thousands of people. The other thing that I would also try to point out is try to educate our people as much as we can, because China is always trying to learn and relearn.
Yeah.
And I think here that's something we struggle with. Once we reach a certain level, we stop. We get complacent.
Mm.
And then new technology come in. That's when we are waking up, and that's when we want to start learning.
Adjusting, yeah.
Adjusting, and that should not be the way moving forward.
Yeah.
So we need to keep always inventing ourselves in keeping an eye what is trending, even if it's not something we are using yet in the country. For as long as it's in Europe or in America or in China, we all know that down the line it will reach Africa. Mm. And once it reaches South Africa, you know, and South Africa is our brother, it's our sister. Mm. So once it reaches South Africa, automatically it will obviously come to Namibia.
Mm. Mm.
So I think relearning is really one of those emphases that I think Namibia can learn from. And also just try to teach, to have good governance, because with China, you can tell that it's one voice.
Yeah.
The voices are not speaking a different tone.
Yeah.
Compared to us here, you know, here we are talking about, we are going to construct how many houses. And then after that, you go hear a different tone. You know, so good governance, really the practice of speaking one voice. I think Namibia really need to really emphasize more on that too. So if we, for instance, right now it's NDP6, and I like how the president is always emphasizing one. In every speech that she gives, she always mention NDP6.
Mm.
And that's exactly the same concept in China. Every day, whatever event it is, you'll always hear the word, the five-year plan.
Yeah.
Five-year plan. So it's like almost a constant reminder to say, this is our plan, and this is what everyone should work towards to.
Yeah.
And yeah.
100%, 100%. Martin, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners for this evening session of the China Corner.
Thank you so much, Dwight, and thank you so much to the listeners. A very good evening to you.
100%.
We speak to Mr. Philip Joseph, who, in terms of his contribution, this is what he had to say.
And welcoming to this evening session of the China Corner for September, we are joined also by Mr. Philip Joseph, a media practitioner as well, just like Martin, who you heard a little bit earlier on this evening session. And he also formed part of the same delegation that recently visited Shanghai. Philip, I'll give you the honors in terms of, you know, saying hello and good evening to the listeners for this evening session.
Yeah, Dwight, thank you very much for having me this evening. I mean, it always feels funny being on the other side. I can proudly say this is my very first time being interviewed.
Yeah.
Someone within my profession. But again, thank you very much for having me. It's quite an honor and a privilege. But yeah, just to jump straight into things, I don't know if you have the question, but just based on my experience outside, I mean, just from the airport, as soon as we landed, I was just breathless. I think the first thing I said was just, wow.
Was it the view specifically of Shanghai? Or
just the view. But as soon as we got from the airport, because the airport is quite big, very busy. But as soon as we got from the airport, as soon as we're driving to the hotel, I was just fascinated, firstly, by their engineering in terms of how they've constructed their roads. They've always made use of the space they have available. You know, don't get me wrong, this is not me trying to say our engineers don't work enough, but if you go around Windhoek, you find that, you know, space is becoming limited by the time. But again, with China, you find like, what, 5-6 stories of roads, more like a hotel. You don't even know which road is leading you to which side. But again, I think the easiest way for me to describe the Shanghai trip is that it maybe just stop and think about development for a while. I mean, if obviously you see the technology, the buildings, the transport system and everything looks very modern. I believe what made the trip meaningful for me was that we weren't only shown the northern China, but we also looked, or they also took us through their history, which I felt was also very important. You know, we've been shown where China came from, particularly the challenges it faced, and how the country itself developed through the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and beyond. During that time, I think it was around about 1949, still was regarded as a very poor state, but again, for me, as someone coming from, again, Namibia, that comparison was, I'd say, quite unavoidable. You know, you start asking yourself, okay, if the country can go through such a transformation over a number of decades, you tend to ask yourself, okay, what are the lessons, what lessons are there for us? And then they spoke very much on the education system, and then that was also something that stood out for me. We were able to see how education, you know, the introduction of technology and economic planning were connected to this somewhat broader development story. So, I mean, one perfect example, they took us to this urban center again, and it's easy for any town, even if you look at our local authorities and our municipalities, yes, they can have a strategic plan from 2025 to 2030. But bringing it to life is sort of a challenge. Right? Whereas China, you know, it's a thing of, apart from their five-year plan, they also have a 15-year plan. Regardless of who comes in, regardless of what party they come from, and I know China's political system is quite different from ours, but regardless of who comes in, they know what they have to bring to the table. Understand? And then again, they've also emphasized a lot on their cultures. And I remember we're going through a lecture, and then they're taking us again through their history, how they've came about, how they've adopted certain methods, how they've heavily invested in their research and their education. It's also similar with the model our late founding president wanted, that is now Dr. Sen Yoma. You know, sending our students to China, whatsoever. But obviously, again, China's main core that drove them through was their cultural values. Because if you look at it, even before the China we know now, China was still regarded even in the ancient times, they were regarded as great China. They were very big on philosophy, they were very big on education and so forth. So that they still were still integrated within them, regardless of the challenges they've gone through. So I believe that's the same vision we wanted to take a road, but then again, obviously, again, change of power. Every politician becomes the one who drives their own agenda. I'm not naming one, but then again, if things constantly change, it's difficult to really put something into place.
Or to keep track of it, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and if you look at it, because I asked the question, so my question to the lecturer was like, okay, so are you telling us that Namibia should take a similar path? And I was like, no, I'm not saying Namibia should develop a socialism
model or something else.
Communism, no. Because again, it comes down to the core values. It's the same as when you come from home, what we are taught. For instance, remove your cap when you have to speak to elders. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. Say this, say that. If again, you keep some of these things, it sort of like plays a role, especially when you grow up, you're like, no, there's still some things I have to keep, you know, to keep myself sane. But again, going back to what I was saying, I personally, the city is wow. I mean, the fact that it has two airports within one city is quite magnificent. It also just gets to tell you about the population and just how advanced they're growing. The fact that they pay attention to the simplest things, right? And I'm talking about the simplest things where again, I'll go back to, they had a committee they created that focuses on social issues that any human being can just let slide. That can be even, let's say, you come to the roadblock, not the roadblock, but the traffic lights, right? It probably takes 15 seconds for the lights to change, for the passengers to walk, or 30 seconds. And in most cases, let's say that maybe frustrates people and then forces them to cross the road, and maybe in most cases it causes an accident. The person that decided to turn left decided to turn right. You know, some of these things, you know, they involve the community, community expresses themselves, and then again, when they take these things, you know, they take them in, they see there's a committee, they see how they can brainstorm, and then they come up with an implementation to say, okay, this is how we'll go about it. Obviously, this issue has also reduced the accidents that happen in that area, but again, as someone from Namibia, you look at this thing, you'll be like, it's not really that important, because again, I'm not here to bash anyone, but you find someone, the lights are red, he says do not cross, but we end up crossing because we want to get there, and because you see there is no cars coming whatsoever, you know, just some of these examples.
Well, one of the things also, because I was also part of delegation last year, and we went to a different city, but we saw the coordination in transport. Was that also something that impressed you, Phil?
Exactly. I mean, It's just one of those where you see they've invested, again, because I was in Shanghai itself, I was not in Beijing, Hong Kong, Guangzhou, and all these other places, but where I was in Shanghai, it's so developed that they've accommodated really everyone. You find that they've made enough space for people, even with bicycles, to ride.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then again in Namibia, you find that there's really a limited space, and it tends to cause that anxiety amongst drivers. Even when it comes to pedestrian crossing, it's quite insightful. Again, going back to the center with BNET, they've shown us all their transport systems and the fact that there's technology in place to keep track of how their transport system should take them from point A to B and from B to C. And even if, let's say, in 5-6 years, some development comes up, we are able to maneuver ourselves around this. It's quite magnificent, and it just gets to show you the efforts that the government is putting in place. So, yeah, I think overall the experience from there, all the other things we came about, I mean, in terms of how we operate as a media household, quite similar in a way, but they're just very big on technology. I mean, even the fact that we saw a robot cop. I mean, I thought these things only existed in movies, but again, I was and you know, obviously, you become curious. You start asking questions like you're a little kid, because that's what you have to do. To say, okay, look, I mean, there's a robot cop here. You know, are they only designed for a specific reason? And they say, yeah, each robot that you find, or each, I don't want to say humanoid, but basically like a robot, is designed to do something. You find that a robot is just designed to make ice cream. A robot is designed just to play the piano. You find a robot is just basically designed just to be a police officer. I mean, they've gone through martial arts training, they've gone through everything, but again, it's one of those, and just to put it in a nutshell again, going back, I think I was mostly just impressed by how much they've invested in not only their education, but in their research. So again, people speak of, yes, invest in your education, invest in this, but again, if you then invest in your education, maybe it's a similar model we can have to say, look, let's send our students out to all different countries. Even when China was still regarded as a poor state, they still managed a way to send their students to different countries to do their practicals, to learn from different countries as to how they live their lives, what they value, whether it's culturally, whether it's traditionally, whether it's from a modern side of things. And then with all that information that was obtained, bring it back to China. And the motto they live by is China for one, China for all. And by that I mean, I'm not saying China is the country that's open to giving foreigners a job. No. By China for one, China for, I mean, they are just for Chinese people. For you to go to China and see, let's say, 40% of foreigners having different jobs now, you know. And again, these are the type of things they've done to say, look, but it takes us 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. As soon as we achieve that objective to say, look, we've gained enough knowledge, bring all this knowledge back home. Let's see how we can go about in terms of developing our own country. I believe they were patient enough, and that has finally paid off for them. And, I mean, we can basically regard them as a superpower now. So
apart from the first impressions that you just now cited, Phil, like other major talking points that potentially also stood out for you. For example, some of the visits you mentioned, you know, meeting with some of the academia, in terms of the presentations they gave you guys. Were there any other particular interesting dimensions or talking points that also stood out for you that is a specific interest for you?
I mean, if we have to bring it down to that, I mean, they've touched quite on a number of things, but again, I think about 60 to 70% was mostly on their history, their education, and their research. Also, in terms of, again, their technology, but just overall, the fact that they've largely accepted innovation of African countries to come in their borders, and then they tend to keep these ideas for themselves. Not to say they're going to be selfish, or they tend to come off as if they are in. How do I go about this? It's not to say they're going to rule over your idea, but for me, it's what stood out for me is basically just how they tend to learn from others.
So it's almost like a rate of acceptance, a rate of what you call it, knowledge sharing, yeah, information sharing.
Yeah, and again, Dwight, if you look at it, again, because you're coming from this country, going to another country, whether you like it or not, comparison has to come in. And again, in terms of how the economy is run and how they function, is quite different from us. Again, we were, I don't know, maybe if Martin maybe mentioned it, or if Helen is about to mention it, but I'll say it now. You can be driving from the airport, for instance, right? Going to the hotel. And Dwight, I can tell you now, it was literally 10 p.m., 11 p.m., or heading to 11 p.m., and find people working in the middle of the night on the road. Again, they've mentioned this thing where they say, human beings can rest, but machines don't. You understand? It gets to show you how much they prioritize the development of their country. Because I was asking myself, because I was sitting to one of our tour guides, and I was like, why do people work at 10 p.m. and 11 p.m.? He said, no. You know, the countries and the companies are big enough to pay these people relatively well. Maybe not much, but it's enough to sustain the company, especially when it comes to salaries. You find within the 24-hour period, you find three different shifts. You pay someone, you pay them a certain rate, and then you know the work has to continue regardless of who comes in this shift, and things cannot be stagnant. In Namibia, I find a project supposed to be completed in a month. In China, that can happen in a month or 2 months. And it's just that work ethic. Not to say we don't. I mean, we also have the work ethic, but the earth is just on another, it's just on another level, where you just look at it as, maybe these people are, I mean, you know, they like to use the term crazy, but again, their work ethic is just, it's not comparable to ours. And again, we look at Namibia's biggest issue now is housing, land especially. But again, in Shanghai, it was a different story. Now, okay, I'll just say China. It's a different story. Whereas you find for the low, and I'm talking about very low to, let's say, for instance, middle-income people, they've really invested. They want to look. We're talking of construction workers. What other low-income job is there? So construction workers, plumber, probably, and just all these other fields that people don't really see as jobs or professions where people make a lot of money. Government has invested so much that they've made life actually easier for them by providing them with adequate housing. And I just wish we had some type of platform as well where we could just visually, where I could just visually share some of the photos I've taken from our trip. I mean, they've taken us to one of these complexes, right? And they are close to, let's say, even 300 units. From the bachelor flat to a two-bedroom to sort of like a hostel-designed compound. And everything's just so modern. And then I look back at the flat I'm living in, and I'm like, yo, it's crazy how the Chinese government operates and how they tend to support their people for them to live I don't want to use the term comfortable, but just enough for them to be able to perform when it comes to doing their job. Because at the end of the day, a happy worker is, or a happy man is a happy worker, as they say.
Sort of like getting into our conclusionary point, Philip, if we have to look at sort of like the potential in terms of Namibia, you know, adopting some of the things that you observed, for example, like the core needs, for example, like a housing dimension. Obviously, you and Martin were both told, you know, we can't copy and paste because no two countries are the same. But what do you think we can, you know, highlight from as something that we can learn from the visits that your delegation saw?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like you're cutting. Can you just repeat the question again?
For example, if you could see potentially from some of the impressions, the things that you saw in the visit to Shanghai, no two countries obviously are the same. But is there something that you believe that Namibia can potentially learn from in terms of applying here in a Namibian context?
I mean, again, I mean, China went through their very difficult periods. And if we have to take it down to history, Namibia is just, 36? Feel like we're still a baby. We're slowly getting there. And I believe if I know it's easier said than done, but as long as majority, even if the 100% of the population does not believe in it, at least if majority of our population can believe in one common goal to say, okay, this is how we want to go about. I feel that can really help us. And I know the answer might sound vague, because at the same time, we can learn a lot, not necessarily copy the Chinese system, because our circumstances are completely different. But to have a clear idea of where we want to be 20, 30, 40 years from now, again, it might sound cliche, but education is very important. And I'm talking of putting it in a very, very, very practical terms, because it's so easy for everyone to graduate now and say, okay, I want a job, but we have to do it in such a way that even if we do employ our people, it's actually done in a way where it actually contributes to skill development, where we can develop our country and our economy in such a way where we can not only build roads and buildings, but we can also develop people who are going to run those industries, design the technologies and the infrastructures. Because looking at how things are set up now, I truly believe, as a patriot of my country as well, we do have the people that can build, that can design, that can innovate. But again, if you look at how our system is designed, it sort of limits and discourages some of our graduates, some of our innovators and entrepreneurs. But again, that is where the true value addition is. In Namibia, we have the minerals, we have the livestock, we have agriculture with the products, and now we have emerging opportunities in energy. But we just need to ask ourselves how much more value can we create before these products leave our borders. And I know it's, even as a leader, I know people maybe don't want to say this, to say, look guys, as a country, we must be willing to suffer for the next 20, 30 years. I don't think that is something the country would want to hear. But post-independence, maybe everyone was happy that we had, that we have the freedom now, but everyone expected things just to change so quickly. I think that also contributed to us just jumping ship very quickly. But if we can confidently change our mindset to say, look guys, as much as we want A, B, C, and D, can we suffer as a country for the next? And when I speak of stuff, I'm not saying
like poverty and desperation and stuff like that. Yeah,
for us to go through certain periods, for us just to change the mindset of Namibians, I think that can really do a lot for our country. And then just the development in terms of showing the importance of, you know, building industries around the resources instead of just remaining at the bottom of value chain, you know, exporting raw materials. But again, we do not have the industry to set these things up. And if you look at China, they back their entrepreneurs. They put in the money. You know, again, I'm not sure throwing shots or anything. You find someone did A, B, C, and D, and then the government recognized them for it. And trust me, they're not even an innovative person or anything. The person gets, let's say, 400,000. Someone comes to the government with a certain idea, the government confidently knows that maybe this can help us. And this person joins the list of other people who are not assisted. Then, how then, as an entrepreneur, are you looking at going forward? Then again, that forces you to doing what? Going back to your 9-to-5, being on the safe side. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of us have really gone into that direction, to say we are not at that level yet where we have enough risk takers to say, okay, let's do ABC, let's get more knowledge cutties, let's get more businessmen with the mindset of the Chicos and whatsoever. If we can have a number of Namibians that think that way, I think that can vastly contribute to the development of our country. So yeah, I think the biggest lesson I brought back is that development needs consistency. Again, they showed us sometimes you don't necessarily have to be you don't need to be the brightest or the smartest person in the room, but if you are willing to accept the path of failure and telling yourself, okay, let me just do it regardless. It's the same as going to the gym. You know, you want to, like Dwight, for instance, you want to lose that kapunda, you don't necessarily have to be the fittest person that day, but if you can keep on going back to the gym every single day, trust me, you know, progress will be there, and I believe that's the way to go about in Namibia. But yeah, do I just to leave you with it, I don't want to bore you or sound like a politician. For me, that's probably the biggest lesson Namibia can take from China's experience. And again, don't only ask where are we today, we need to be asking where we want to be decades from now, and start building towards that now. I believe, you know, there's a famous saying of Martin X where he mentioned that the future belongs to those who prepare for it today. So yeah, I believe, I don't know if that's 20 minutes, but yeah.
Yeah. No, it's 100%, Phil. On that note, Phil, thank you for taking the time to talk to us and the listeners for this evening.
Okay, thank you.
Not a problem.
China Corner was proudly brought to you by the Embassy of the People's Republic of China in Namibia.